VentureCast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All recorded in Muscle Shoals.
Man.
Pretty fantastic.
That freaking song, Simple Man. Like, oh, don't let me think too hard about things. That's bullshit.
You know, let me just say something. You're in a lot of trouble, man. You have exited your role on this podcast. Literally 2 weeks ago, you were like, I don't get Elvis. That's a thing you said. And now here you are. You're like, I don't understand Simple Man. I'm too complicated. I'm a complex person.
I am.
I understand because of it. You know who understands being a simple kind of man? Me. I do. I'm going to be the new voice of the people.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
That's what I'm talking about. Let's go, fellas! Come on! I am a master of the computer. The master of technology is what I am. Jeff Simons. We haven't had a weather report in Berkeley, California in a long time. What do you got?
Well, it's been sunny for 3 days in a row for the first time since New Year's Eve.
Okay.
So everyone's thrilled. It's still cold. It's weird. It was 38 this morning.
Woo!
The high today was 55. It has not gotten above 60 degrees in 2023 yet. So that California living is not with us. I'm solo parenting this week.
Oh.
Because The missus has moved to much sunnier climes for the week and is having a lovely time on vacation with her mom. So B and I are living the dream.
All right.
So we've been having a good old time. Yes.
Ben Barton, how is Knoxville?
Lovely. It was 86 degrees today here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I can report that Georgia, my youngest daughter, who's at Reed College in Portland, when I asked her about the weather, she said, "It's been funny. It's been hailing a lot."
Yeah.
So I think it's even worse in Portland than it is.
Wow. The West
that is
Coast.
Awful. That the is West rough. Coast has sucked all winter. Everybody from San Francisco north is just miserable.
So. Well, I'll tell you what, it has been 98 degrees. The sun is beating down. The cotton is high. Because we're in the deep south, gentlemen. Mississippi, Alabama. What? Is that some pecan pie? I will have a slice.
You're coming up as a
that's
super
the intro. That's it. The pecan pie.
I was trying to. Yeah, I was thinking
you
of
really
some delicacies.
Come off as a like authentic deep south guy. It's they're dead about it.
So. Well, it's funny. You go to websites like interesting things about Alabama, interesting things about Mississippi, and they say Southern hospitality, cotton, and the civil rights movement. Seems like there's something, there's a step missing in there somewhere.
They're missing boll weevils. I believe there's a lot of boll weevils in that cotton you have to watch out for.
Pine trees. There's that whole area, Alabama, that's just nothing but pine trees.
That's right.
That's great. Alabama pines, indeed. Well, we're excited to share with you our research and our excitement about Alabama, Mississippi, maybe a little rural Arkansas, rural Louisiana. Dip your toes in there, gentlemen. You go where you want to go. But first things first, Jeff Simons, did you have some gigs with our good friend Rich Price?
I did. I opened for the Sweet Remains last Thursday night at the venerable Sweetwater Mill Valley. Played a solo show for the first time in, 15 years or something like that. Ooh. So that was pretty wild. Gentlemen, I played Music I've Forgotten for you, and
did the gypsy make an appearance?
I sang the bridge just like you like it,
yes.
And I will get a recording to you, so that song's back in the mix.
You didn't ask then Rich to come out and do the penny whistle? You couldn't get him to do the recorder with you?
He could have done the harmonica, and then I actually sat in for the whole Sweet Remains set. I played all their whole show Thursday night, and then I went down to Saratoga and sat in with them on Saturday night as well. So I got to play two
that's
full
great.
Sets Fantastic. With them. They are in their usual spectacular voice. And at in Mill Valley, because Rich was in front of some hometown friends, they got loose with the stories, and it was very fun. They were very funny. And
awesome.
Got to play with this great drummer, Todd, who's just we were quite a mighty rhythm section, if I could toot my own horn for a second. So we had a great time. They're coming back out in September, and I'm hoping to sit in with them again then. So good stuff.
I think it's time for the Sweet Remains to have a Southern tour. Do the Asheville, Knoxville circuit.
It's funny. They're on tour in your old neck of the woods this coming week, Timmy, and they had 5 shows planned, and they had to cancel the Scituate show.
What?
I know.
Because of the barbiturates?
They did not cancel Scituate because of drug use, but I think everybody from Scituate decided to go to the Boston show the night before. So we might be saturating the market, but they're playing Northampton and Boston and one other New England gig. But
if
you're out
them.
There and you're in the New England area, go see my friends, the Sweet Remains. They are really impressive 3-part harmony singer. Like all 3 of them really sang your asses off.
Really remarkable. Great. Well, we've got an awesome, awesome song for you all to get to the music, because we're arriving in the Deep South. I don't know if we're flying into Biloxi, or we're driving into Oxford. I don't know, but we're going to listen to a song, gentlemen. And I have a question for you before we play the arrival song. Does the arrival song for this section of the country have to be Sweet Home Alabama?
I'm going to say no as well.
I mean, you can choose Sweet Home Alabama, but it doesn't have to be that.
Because my daughter said it has to be Sweet Home Alabama. And I was like, kind of tired of that song. Kind of racist. I don't want it. And she said, no, you have to take the bad with the good. That is the anthem of the Deep South.
Fair.
Okay.
My Coming daughter's love Sweet Home Alabama. And honestly, I do too.
So there we go. Here it comes, gentlemen.
'Leonard Skinner.
Oh
well, Ben
loves. Previously chosen.
I know. I
have conflicted feelings about Leonard Skinner and this song in particular, because you grow up in Maryland, you're right on the edge of that Southern thing, right? Like half of Maryland is New England facing, or like Mid Atlantic facing, and the other half of Maryland is, if Sherman had just held the line in North Carolina, we'd be a free like there. And so that Sweet Home Alabama was one of those litmus tests. Like, I'd be at a party and I knew some people and not other people, and that song would come on, and then all these folks would, and you'd be like, oh, like all these folks would reveal so much about themselves based on the reaction to Sweet Home Alabama. So I actually enjoy it way more in California when I'm not in the midst of it as a rallying cry for a particular point of view than I did when I was a kid. But the song is undeniable. Is there any other 3-chord dun dun bang a dun gung gang that forces you to bob your head in rock and roll history? I'm not sure there is.
Ben, how does a Brooklyn boy come to this song?
Oh, dude, I went through a whole Southern classic rock stage where this was like front and center on that. And humorously, I heard the opposite thing to Jeff. Did you know that this is the unofficial song of the University of Alabama now?
Is that right?
This is their Rocky Top.
That makes sense.
The University of Tennessee has an actual song that's like Our Beloved Hill or something like that that's unlistenable. But then we also have Rocky Top. And they're transitioning Sweet Home Alabama into their actual fight song. It's a problem.
You know what's funny? I always got confused too. Like, I miss old Bammy once again, and I think it's a sin. When I first heard it, I was like, yeah, good for you for feeling bad about missing Alabama. But I don't think that's what he means. I think just works. And I think it's a sin that I'm not there. But he doesn't sing that part.
No. I think it's both. I think there is a bittersweetness to it. There's arguing both sides of it. That's what I think.
You do? I think that's generous. Totally.
Well, I haven't liked Lynyrd Skynyrd since the Freebirds took on the Von Erichs in professional wrestling. That was they always was played Skynyrd, and I was a big Von Erich guy. Anyways, I wanted to share.
Oh, wait, so hold on. One last thing. This will become apparent when I choose my act, song, place.
Okay.
This is not recorded at the Muscle Shoals studios. Tragic to report, although it is a love song. The dudes in Skynyrd have described it as a love song to Muscle Shoals. Can you name some of the Skynyrd songs recorded at Muscle Shoals?
Ooh, I didn't even know that they had recorded there.
Oh, dude, they recorded Skynyrd's first and Skynyrd's first and last.
Oh, well then, Tuesday's Gone, Free Bird.
Yep.
I can't remember what else is on that first record. They're all huge hits, but
Freebird,
I didn't own that record.
Give me three steps. Simple Man. Pretty fantastic.
That freaking song, Simple Man. Like, oh, don't let me think too hard about things. That's bullshit.
Let me just say something. You're in a lot of trouble, man. You have exited your role on this podcast. Literally 2 weeks ago, you were like, I don't get Elvis. That's a thing you say. And now here you are. You're like, I don't understand Simple Man. I'm too complicated. I'm a complex person.
I am.
You know who understands being a simple kind of man? Me. I'm going to be the new voice of the people.
Here's what's unforgivable about Simple Man. It's 7 minutes long. That song outstays its welcome. Like,
first
the
of all,
coda
that's...
of that song goes on for really like
simple,
you're a simple
people
man
like
for
me,
three extra minutes.
Simple people like me enjoy that. I want more. If only it could be longer, then I could contemplate it.
I'm sure in concert they stretch Simple Man out to 13, 14 minutes. So.
Simple people don't even realize how long it's going on. They're just like, doo, doo, doo. Anyways, on this day, 7 years ago, on this day, I went on the Facebook and I posted this message. Jeff Simons and Ben Barton, I'm starting a Tuesday night music club for my two oldest children. We listen to one song per week and talk about its context and its legacy. I was trying to figure out whether to arrange the listening schedule by time period or genre, but I finally decided to rank the songs by the greatness of the artist, which means, you may recall a long car ride in Tennessee, that the Rolling Stones debate must resume. Are they in the top 10? Do they crack the top 5? Discuss. Gentlemen,
that's the origin. That's the whole thing right there.
That's our origin story right there.
I love it.
It started on a Facebook post. And you both said that the Rolling Stones were number two all time. So that's
nice.
That's pretty good.
And you also cracked the top 10. The Rolling Stones. You're the best. You know what I love about that post is it reveals what a better parent you are than I am. Like, I'm organizing a thing and my two children, and it'll be a learning moment, and it'll be every Tuesday night, and we'll spend this magical time together, and we'll listen to a song, and I will make, and right now my daughter's in the next room watching Lego City on Netflix while I do this podcast before I take her to dinner. There's our two houses in
There's
like 35
a worse
seconds.
Thing to watch. Yeah, but look at us now, 7 years later. I dumped them for the two of you. So anyways, all right, let's get to travel facts about Alabama.
Oh, boy.
Alabama invented the windshield. Did you guys know that?
Okay. A lot of bugs in Alabama. They got sick of picking those bugs out of their teethers, for sure.
Also, the largest peanut producer in the country. Do you gentlemen like peanuts?
You did say peanut, did you not?
Do you like
peanuts? How are you pronouncing that? Peanut? You having a peanut?
Okay.
What are you, Andre the Giant and the Princess Bride? I believe that about Alabama and peanuts, yeah.
Meanwhile, Mississippi gives us root beer. They invented root beer.
Like sarsaparilla? Like that kind of original root beer?
Barks root beer is from Mississippi. I got nothing more than that. And this is shocking. The first human heart transplant. Mississippi. And the first lung transplant.
It was the same event. That's when Uncle Peanut was like, well, maybe I can move it into this.
All right, listen.
Can send your cards and letters to Jeff_Simons.
All right, let's get to the literary corner. I know most people enjoy the literary corner. Mississippi, on its team, has Faulkner, Welty, and Richard Wright. Alabama, Harper Lee, Truman Capote, Zora Neale Hurston, Walker Percy.
No, not
either
Zora.
Way.
Yep. I was about to say that.
Zora's from Florida. No, Florida. Zora's
born in Alabama.
Yeah, but didn't grow up there.
Okay.
Come on, you can't give it. I need it.
When you remove her, then it's
I know,
then it's
easy.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Well, let's pretend she's there.
All right.
Still, is it Mississippi?
It's still Mississippi.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I mean, I really
started
like
with Faulkner
blood.
On Mississippi, and then you went Harper Lee on Alabama. It was the tough
thing. Yeah.
I love To Kill a Mockingbird, but that's not Faulkner.
Nope. No, I agree. And Richard Wright is.
I love really Richard Wright's. Richard Wright's kind of getting lost in the shuffle, and it drives me crazy because Richard Wright is some powerful stuff, but he's not. He's like slipping out of the canon, and I'm not 100% sure why.
I don't know.
He's worth people's attention. Those Richard Wright books
are something
else.
He is great. All right. The torture basement. I am here, comfortable in my torture basement. Let's see how you guys do. I'm gonna give you 15 songs. Oof. I think I went easy this time. So let's say you got to get 12.
Okay. I'm a little bummed that Sweet Home Alabama is obviously not on it. I was counting on that as the freebie layup. But
I'm trying to figure out, do I try to insult you with the final song or like give you something nice with the final song? And today I went with insult you. But I also have a Sweet Home Alabama insult embedded.
Oh,
in
nice. Okay, well, I know what that is then. All right, here we go.
Watch out. Somebody take me home through those Alabama pines.
Oh, hell yeah.
North Alabama back in the 1970s when dinosaurs still roamed the earth.
Two in a row.
Only one thing.
Three.
I did wrong. Stayed in Mississippi.
Four.
Torn out the heart of Mississippi, find yourself
another country to be part of.
Down in Mississippi, I'm down in Alabama where they say you all sipping whiskey out the bottle, not
Ugh. That's such a yuck. Classic. Ah, oh, song's so bad.
Wait. I only counted 14.
Okay. I didn't count them.
Team. Do I say 11 now or 12? Still 12? Or do I go to 11? Well,
we're not going to get 12. I don't think we're going to get more than 9. So.
Oh, come on. I'll give you 11.
All right.
Oh, wow.
I think we're screwed.
Oh, you might be. Okay. Number one.
Number one, what's the name of the guy who was Clint Eastwood's sidekick and Burt Reynolds' sidekick and all those stupid, like, Clyde the Monkey movies and the Smokey and the Bandit movies? What's that guy's name?
That is not the same person. Not the same person. Two different actors.
Who am I thinking of?
You're thinking of the singer of that song.
Am I?
Yes.
His name is like Jimmy Reed or something like that. Like, it's not Jimmy Reed, though. It's something else Reed. I don't remember.
It is Jerry Reed.
It is Jerry Reed. Nicely done.
He did U.S. Mail and all those stupid ass. He's like got a truckload of dumb ass.
He's Guitar Man. Come on. How dare you?
All right.
Ben Barton is the second one. You got that one.
I have no idea in the second one.
It's either Shania Twain or what's the other really famous female country singer who's married to the other really great country singer? What's her? Faith Hill. Is it Shania Twain?
I think it's Faith Hill.
Jeff, you are en fuego. Let me take some easy ones. Let me take some low-hanging fruit.
Oh, my God.
Jason Isbell.
Correct.
Yep.
Drive-By Truckers.
Correct.
Yes.
Bob Dylan.
Yeah. 5 for 5 so far, gentlemen.
And then Phil Oakes doing the Mississippi song.
Boy, that's a rough song. Mississippi, find another country to be part of. Wow.
He's part of the Dylan, Dave Van Ronk, Greenwich Village thing. He wrote I Ain't Marching Anymore.
Oh, I like him.
My dad's a big Phil Oakes guy.
Yeah, there we go. He's great.
Then I'm lost for a while. I don't know who did the Down in Mississippi. I have no idea.
Ben, do you got a guess? Number 7?
No idea.
That was Mavis Staples.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
God, I should have gotten that. I like the sound of it. And then I love whatever this next song is, and I have no idea who it is.
So this is one of those names I know from WKRP in Cincinnati, but I don't think I've ever heard a song by this guy. That is Gary U.S. Bonds.
Oh, no way. All right. I like that a lot. And then you've got International Nutsack Kid Rock next, which you made us
listen to. Kid Rock, very nice. And the Doobies, right? Back to back.
Yeah, yes. I'm enjoying that Kid Rock Bud Light handgun video that's going around the internet, really leaving a legacy for himself behind.
Oh, God, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and then Doobie Brothers and then Grateful Dead.
All right.
And then I don't know the rap song.
Ben, anything? It is G-Love.
G-Love.
And his latest album, Mississippi, a friend of the podcast. We will not tell him that happened.
Sorry, G-Love.
8-9. So you got to bring home the last two for the win.
Well, I don't know.
I have a stab on one of them.
Go.
Is it... Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn.
Yeah, I think it's Loretta Lynn for sure.
Nice! Yes. Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn. And the final song, I could have chosen Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong, but I went with a different duo.
That's a duo?
A male-female duo.
No idea then. I thought it was Rosemary Clooney, but I don't know who it is.
Ben?
Oh, zero. Nothing.
Oh, I guess you guys don't like the movie Elf. Because that was She and Him
I actually really like the movie Elf, and I really like her as Zooey Deschanel, right? Is she,
yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, totally.
Who's the him? Is it M. Ward? Is that who the him is?
M. Ward. Yeah. That would have been taking us a while, Timmy.
I never would have gotten that.
We would have had
years.
To start guessing out random parts of the alphabet to get there.
That's not bad. But we get 10.
You got 10. That's pretty
good.
There were
only 14, not 15. So I counted as a win. I counted as a win. He said there were 15. We had to get 11. One didn't exist. So I'm going to count that.
We pulled a couple of just randos right out of our butt, too. So I'm proud
of
us.
That's fair. All right. Let's see who knows geography. I'm going to mention three cities. You tell me which two are connected by the same federal highway. Birmingham, Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama, and Mobile, Alabama. Which two are connected by the same federal highway?
Birmingham and Montgomery. I think, actually, then doesn't Montgomery also go to...
No, but that's it. 65 connects Birmingham and Montgomery.
I've
nice
done
job.
That drive, so yeah.
All right, well done. Shreveport, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. Which two are connected by the same federal highway?
Shreveport and New Orleans are on I-10. Is that wrong?
That is correct. That is incorrect. Baton Rouge and New Orleans are connected by Route 10. And sadly, Oxford, Jackson, and Biloxi did not connect by a federal highway. Sorry. All right.
I've actually done that Louisiana to Baton Rouge. I mean, that New Orleans to Baton Rouge drive. That's embarrassing.
Oh, that's too bad. All right.
But I do know that Shreveport is where the Independence Bowl is held every year, which is usually the first bowl game. So I'm excited about that.
Okay. I also want to know, so I was looking at TripAdvisor and the top five attractions of each state. Have you guys heard of the Mississippi Blues Trail?
I have not, but I imagine it's probably
pretty
cool.
They've got markers all the way through the state, like 100 markers, and you can just go and follow the history of the blues all through Mississippi. Doesn't that sound fun? Like in a convertible? Awesome. Yeah.
With a windshield provided by the state of Alabama. That could be great.
That's correct. Top five items to visit or places to visit in Mississippi. Number one, the Vicksburg Military Park. You guys going?
Okay. No.
No. The USS Cairo Museum. It was a Civil War ship.
Anti any Civil War stuff in Mississippi. Not
yeah. Right. I've been there. I've been enough Civil War stuff to last a lifetime. So
what about the Horseshoe Casino?
Can't help you.
Yeah,
I do actually want to go. I do actually want to go to Oxford, Mississippi.
Like, I've been to Oxford, Mississippi. I went to a football game there and also hung out there. I thought Oxford was super extra mega interesting. So on the one hand, there's this beautiful central square that has one of America's great bookstores. And I've been to Powell's and I've been to the Strand and I've been to the bookstore in San Francisco that's on Nob Hill. I've been to a bunch of famous bookstores. Uh-huh. And the bookstore in Oxford is fantastic. It's basically bankrolled by the guy who wrote The Firm. And it's like
filled with Grisham.
So it's like it's a nonprofit. He just pays for the whole thing. It's filled with all these signed copies. And anybody has come through Oxford is reading there.
So fun.
Signed copies of books. Super great. There's lovely food. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus. And it's creepy as fuck. It's so creepy there.
Wait, what? What happened? Why is it creepy?
First of all, the fucking football team are the Rebels.
Yeah.
And okay. Yeah.
All white people in the Grove hanging out, getting drunk, and they're all dressed up, and it's super weird. And then you go to the stadium, and it's the Rebels, and it's all African Americans playing for no money for these random white people. It's just really tough. I mean, basically, this is going to be the situation for both Alabama and Mississippi. The history is tough to get over. And part of the reason it's tough to get over is because we're still in the middle of it. You know what I mean?
That's what
I'm
talking about.
If we were on the far side of this, maybe I could feel a little differently about it. But I mean, it was super funny. Like, I went and I had a great meal. I really enjoyed my time. A professor from the Mississippi Law School showed us around. He's a fantastic guy. And I was still really sick to my stomach after the experience. Like, it was upsetting.
Well, just yesterday, Mississippi's governor, I can't remember his name, but he once again declared that April is Confederate History Month in the state of Mississippi. It's not even Confederate History Month. It's Confederate Appreciation Month.
I was going to say, every day is Confederate Appreciation Day in Mississippi.
You know how?
Yeah, totally.
And I'm just trying to explain to my students, we went to D.C. and we're in the Capitol, and, you know, each state gets to send two statues to Statuary Hall. And my student's like, well, why is Jefferson Davis here? Like, why does Mississippi in 2023, why do they still insist that Jefferson Davis's statue is at our Capitol? In 2023, like, you haven't produced anyone else of note?
Well, here's the thing. Your reaction is why they insist on it. Like, there's someone's listening to this podcast going, because that is exactly part of it's a finger in the eye for sure.
Good for you. Like,
you remember
really
that old joke? Like, the child comes up to the parents and says, there's a Mother's Day and a Father's Day. Why isn't there a Child's Day? And the parent says, every day is Child's Day.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about Mississippi's Confederate Appreciation Day.
Yeah, right.
There is Martin Luther King Day and Veterans Day, and everybody else's Confederate Appreciation Day.
Well, oh, no. Martin Luther King Day is also Robert E. Lee Day.
That is not true.
Oh, I swear to God. It's shared.
Come on.
All right, I'll double check, and I'll cut it if I'm wrong. We're going to cut all sorts of things from this podcast. All right, so Oxford has a good bookstore, but at the same time, you're a little weirded out. All right, check. Let's go to Alabama, the number one tourist destination, according to TripAdvisor.com, is the USS Alabama. You go get on the battleship, walk around. There's also the Barber Vintage Motorsports Museum. That was number two. Nope, nothing so far.
Do they have any of the cars from the Cars movie at that museum? I would like to meet them.
That's out in Utah. Sorry.
Luigi only followed the Ferraris. I want to meet that kid.
Gulf State Park. I'm sure it's beautiful down there on the shore. And finally, the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute the National Memorial for Justice and Peace. Ben, have you been there yet?
So I have the great good fortune. My brother actually worked on the Legacy Museum. And
did he really?
He helped design some of the exhibits and he worked with Brian on it. Yeah, totally. So I can highly, highly, highly recommend the Legacy Museum. And then the National Memorial is a separate space. And that's super powerful as well. Like crying powerful, Holocaust Museum powerful. One of the things that's most amazing about the Legacy Museum is it's not cheerful at all, and it does not have a happy ending. It does not end with look at all the progress we've made. It ends with we're still fighting this battle and limited progress has been made. And so that makes it a tough watch, but a completely worthwhile watch. And also, they're not fucking around. Like, they make the case. Like, they make the case
that
we went from slavery to Jim Crow to mass incarceration, and the same shit's going on today that was going on all the way through it. And it's super powerful. And it's an amazing mix of first-person dialogue, historical fact, pictures, movies, the whole thing. It's incredible.
The greatest thing.
I'll just say I've seen Bryan Stevenson speak twice, and I had the good fortune of volunteering in San Quentin and getting to know and actually becoming friends with two formerly incarcerated men who are now working with me at my school. And I would say their life stories and how they ended up in that space and watching what they've become given any other opportunity other than the one they were handed based on that legacy. I find that argument profoundly accurate and powerful based on my experience. So.
What I loved about that memorial, and I don't know if your brother had a part in this, but the idea that those markers that are hanging have identical markers outside waiting for different counties across America where lynchings have occurred and waiting for the county to come and claim them and say, yes, this happened in our county, and we are going to acknowledge it and have this marker there to acknowledge this history of racial violence. And thankfully, Asheville has claimed its But what a powerful idea, because you know the holdouts are going to become more and more isolated as time goes by. If they're not going to acknowledge this history of theirs. Has Knoxville claimed theirs, Ben?
I can't remember. Indy will know. I can't remember.
Okay. All right.
Well, some of those places are too busy celebrating Robert E. Lee Day to head over there. So that's going to take me a couple of hours to get over. But yeah. That's a thing.
Woo! Okay. All right. Well, let's get to we forgot to do favorite daughter. Favorite daughter or favorite son, the biggest selling star from the Deep South is Britney Spears.
I make it impossible for you to cut any of this because I'm going to talk over the Britney song.
And I just
want to
dance with you.
That's creepy right there.
Every time they turn the lights down, just want to throw that extra mile for you. Public display of affection.
I like Oops, I Did It Again more than that one.
Personally. Okay.
I do. I like Oops, I Did It Again.
Oops.
Try not to be. An hour from now, you're going to be walking around the kitchen like, oops.
Oops, I did it again.
I spilled all the orange juice onto the couch. I narrate my mistakes to that song frequently.
All right. Well, let's get to our three songs or artists or events. In the Deep South, Jeff, we're going back in time with you. So why don't you go first?
I think Ben should go first because he fell on the sword and he gave me first pick because my first pick was his first pick.
Okay.
So Ben, I'm going to let you go for it.
Excellent. And I've had limited time to research, so I'm going to count on you to backfill for me.
I'll try to do my best.
Muscle Shoal Sound.
Yeah.
Two different very famous recording studios in Sheffield, Alabama. The first is the Fame Studio, F-A-M-E. And then the rhythm section of the Muscle Soul Sound left and created their own studio. And it's unclear whether it's the actual first, but they claim to be the first musician-owned studio. And it was called the Muscle Shoal Sound Studio. And then there's a famous address to it. And there's actually a Cher album named The Address. So it's super similar to Stax, where basically this is just a fantastic, unbelievably good house band where they would send artists down there and then come back out with hits. And these guys just laid down the groove super hard. The obvious act, the clear act, the number one act to choose is Aretha Franklin. I'm going to choose a really weird song, though. I'm not going to choose Aretha. You can pick and choose all of the entire I Never Loved a Man is recorded down there. I probably would have chosen The House That Jack Built because I think that really sort of features the horns and the band. But that's not what I'm going to choose. I'm going to choose a super obscure Lou Rawls song.
Awesome.
Bring It On Home.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Bring It On Home by Lou Rawls in 2006. And hold on, I'll explain why in a second.
Okay.
But Jeff, this is the 2006 remaster, Jeff, Lou Rawls. Bring It On Home.
I'm on it.
So I'm choosing a Lou Rawls song because I don't like Lou Rawls, and I consider Lou Rawls to be super cheesy.
He sure is.
And and that's how freaking good this band is. This is one where you hear the band and you're going to be like, holy crap, who is that band? So we're going to play the first minute, and then Jeff's going to jump ahead to a minute 45 because it starts slow. It kicks in at 45 seconds. At a minute 45, you hear the horns, and you won't believe how freaking good these guys carry Lou Rawls.
Here we go. Jesus.
If you ever change your mind about leaving, about leaving me behind. Hey, my baby, won't you bring it on home? Bring your sweet loving. Bring it on home to me.
Here it comes.
Back where you ought to be. Yeah. Bring it home to me. If you ever change your mind.
So now skip to 145. So you can get the words. Can you believe that? How fucking good that backing track is? It's amazing. Oh, so this is a 63 Sam Cooke song. That's the original famous version of it. Believe it or not, Lou Rawls sang backup on that.
Oh, is that
backup
right?
Backup singer on it.
That's
I think this recording is 69 or 70, and it's at the Muscle Shoals thing. And I just... there's very similar to the sax things. There's various box sets. One of these box sets has this random. I mean, it's not like Lou Rawls has a limited number of hits, anyways. This did not chart.
Nope.
This is not a well-known song. But can you believe how good that band is?
Nope. I actually can't. Love it. I can't believe that comes in
fire through that.
Yeah.
So the Facebook post from 7 years ago that I mentioned earlier had about 16 comments. And one was from my brother Peter, who said Lou Rawls has to be mentioned in the top 10. And I love the fact that Ben Barton agrees with my brother.
No, I do not agree with that. I don't like Lou Rawls at all. And much of his work is super embarrassing. But I mean, but this, like, that's why I love this so much. Yeah. It's like, it's really easy to choose an Aretha song. And basically, like, Aretha's vocals and Aretha's songwriting and everything about Aretha is so unbelievably fantastic. It's hard to pay attention. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to notice how fantastic the band is.
Sure.
When you hear them on a random Lou Rawls B-side, and they're just like, that's apparently what they bring to all of this. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like Jordan in the 70-win season, like just a game after game after game, they're showing up and bringing this performance. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And also, so the studio is super famous, and then a bunch of white acts. I mean, the Rolling Stones recorded there. A million acts came and recorded there all the way through to current day. It's a little teeny weeny town in Alabama, and somehow just this center of music, and the band's fantastic.
That's fascinating. How did that start?
And it's just a remarkable story of musicians, open-minded musicians in a very closed-minded place, finding each other and protecting each other, right? I mean, the story of Aretha's career being saved by those guys. Like, Aretha was a failed Columbia artist that Atlantic bought for like a nickel. And Jerry Wexler took her to Muscle Shoals in Alabama and put her in this room with all these white guys. And she looked at her new Jewish record label producer from Brooklyn and was like, "You have got to be out of your mind. You think we're going to make anything worth it?" And 3 hours later, they had "I Never Loved a Man." I mean, it's just... it's one of those moments where the hybridic opportunities available to us in art and culture, when we can actually get past the lenses we've been trained to use to divide ourselves and find common ground, and the world changes. And then once this band has permission to play like that, they'll just play like that. And then they can back up Lou Rawls. And Lou Rawls is the thing in the way on that track. Like, Lou Rawls
sounds
singing.
Pretty good. He sounds pretty
good.
Fine. I like the vocal.
He's fine, but like when the horns come in and he's like, "I'm still singing. I'm still the one with the name on the record," and the horns are like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. You had your minute." And blow him off the microphone.
Oh, wow. Unbelievable. All right. So you're taking us back to 1937, Jeff?
I'm going even further back. So the Delta Blues are, I don't know, like, what? Where does rock and roll start? Most people now agree that it's the song Rocket 88 with Ike Turner on the piano. But the idea of rock and roll, and I'm going to say the idea because what this artist brings is not just a sound and a performance and an aesthetic, but he creates a character that permeates 20th century American music and consequently the aesthetic of world popular music. This is, of course, I'm speaking of Robert Johnson, the self-proclaimed king of the Delta blues. Robert Johnson, I try to play this music for my students and they just look at me like I'm playing, you know, whale sounds. They're just like, what the hell is this? It sounds so far away and so poorly recorded. I mean, it's recorded in one take directly to an acetate master with one microphone in 1937, and it sounds like it. And they've done what they can to clean it up. Yeah.
Fun fact, that's how I record the torture basement.
That's true. It's true. It's actually very true. The Tim just... and the listeners to this podcast are like, we're with you, my man. Like, you're right. The studio trickery on this show is pretty low key too. But one of the things that's important about Robert Johnson is the myth around him, right? That no, you know, he dies right before he's going to play Carnegie Hall. He's the first big signing of a Columbia talent scout named John Hammond, who will go on to sign Bob Dylan and Bruce Springsteen. He's a cat with pretty damn good ears. But he dies before he can reach his fame, supposedly poisoned by a jealous lover. But he cultivates in his songs this anti-hero that will pop up all across rock and roll. Like Elvis is a sanitized version of Robert Johnson. The Beat Poets, Jack Kerouac wants to be Robert Johnson. Mick Jagger wants to be Robert Johnson. All of these kinds of like dark anti-hero dystopic antagonists that we fell in love with. Every 1970s American film has a character in it that's just trying to fulfill the expectations of the character that Robert Johnson constructs in these songs. And it's what makes his art for me so compelling. I actually think Robert Johnson's music's a little scary because of the nihilistic quality of it. Like, this is a bad guy. Song after song after, some of the songs are funny. Like, there's a really funny song about milkshakes called Malted
and
Milk.
And the Hot Tamale song, too.
And the Hot Tamale song, right? Most of these songs, though, are about being a bad person, taking advantage of people when they're down, coming into a town, wreaking havoc, and leaving. He is unapologetic in the pursuit of his desires. Like, I want to sleep with women. I want to drink whiskey. I want to have no responsibilities. And I'm on the road. I'm in motion. This is a guy who could foresee the impact of the automobile before most people had even ridden in one, right? Like, he understands the allure of leaving behind all your mistakes, like being in motion, riding from one road to another. The reason that there's all these markers, the 100-mile trip, is because Johnson can't stay in one place because he doesn't want roots. And the third night in town, everybody wants to kill him. So he has to be on the move, right? And that's what these songs are about. They're also unapologetically fearless in their embracing of evil as a powerful tool. He makes deals with the devil. He beats his lovers in them. Like, the song I'm going to play is called If I Had Possession Over Judgment Day. And the couplet is, my woman wouldn't have no right to pray, which for me is like the most possessive lyric of all of his. Like, he has meaner lyrics, but just the idea, like, I will take from you your right to your own internal thoughts. I will take from you your right to have faith, right? It's, and I doubt Robert Johnson was that person in life, like the artist and the art are. And he must have had some kind of qualities that made him desirable to people, because the stories about him is that he was beating women off with a stick in every town that he was in. But the art itself, for me, is problematic in all the ways that great American art is problematic. And it is also, I was just making the point about hybridic art. Everybody thinks that the Delta Blues guys invented slide guitar, right? Which is the sound of that bottleneck, and you'll hear it on these tracks. Like, Johnson had huge hands. There's only one really good photograph of him, and he's holding a chord that the average person can't play because his hands are just gigantic. And so he's able to finger chords and play slide guitar at the same time. which is really, really difficult to do. But it turns out they just, this amazing book just came out 2 or 3 years ago. It turns out that all these old black bluesmen learned how to play slide guitar from Hawaiian musicians who had been kicked out of Hawaii when we took it over, and they outlawed Hawaiian slack key ukulele and guitar playing. They went, came to America, pretended to be black minstrels, and toured the country playing Hawaiian folk music. And when they got to the Deep South and played in these juke joints, these black bluesmen were like, how are you doing that thing? And when Blind Willie Johnson gives his last interview to what was essentially public radio in the 1960s, and they say, well, how did you learn how to do that slide thing? He's like, you mean a Hawaiian thing? Well, the Hawaiian guys showed it to us when they came through town. So this is already hybrid music. It's Hawaiian folk music meets Delta blues, meets like enslaved people field chants, all smashed together. And then Johnson takes this, all of these heroic Western ideas about morality and being a hero and being a stand-up person, and takes American Transcendentalism and the Odyssey and just smashes them together, puts his hand in the sock and turns it inside out and says, well, what if the evil guy is the guy who's cool in the winter? You don't get sympathy for the devil without this music. So I think it's worth listening to and letting, you got to get over the weirdness of the sound. You just have to get lost in it. There are only 39 recordings. There are only, I think, 28 original songs, or 38. I can't remember what the number is, but there's a couple of multiple takes. They're all on Spotify. But I'm going to play If I Have Possession Over Judgment Day, because you can hear the guitar playing, the virtuosity for the 30s, and the this kind of otherworldly, spooky, faraway vocal approach. Like, it's instantly recognizable as Robert Johnson. And here we go. Off the neck here, ready? I rolled and tumbled the whole night long because when I woke up in the morning, my biscuit roller was gone. I mean, there's just these lyrics are so unapologetic, and it's problematic, right? Because Johnson invents this anti-hero, and it plays in some of the tropes that have haunted black masculinity since, right? Like,
he's running
towards
it.
I'm a bad guy, I'm hypersexualized, and I'm trouble. And that has been a source of reclaimed power for, you know, NWA and a whole bunch of acts like that. And it has reflexively been something that Black America, particularly Black American men, have had to overcome, right, is the inherent fear of Black men that Robert Johnson is dangerously trading in when he invents this art. And like all great American art, it is all complicated as hell. And I think this music sounds simple to modern audiences. It's classic 12-bar blues and it's couplets, but there's a richness and a complexity to emotion in these songs that is so unusual. Like, these songs are so psychosexually complicated, lyric after lyric after lyric, and it's another 40 years before pop music catches up with this. I mean,
yeah,
Earth Angel, Will You Be Mine has nothing on any of Robert Johnson's lyrics, or frankly, yeah, any of the other guys you mentioned, like Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, all those other guys you mentioned, like, they're not nearly as nuanced and weird and dark and complicated and twisted as Robert Johnson is. And it's what I think has allowed him to transcend this moment and be continually compelling, at least, yeah, at least to me. So,
yeah. Ben Barton.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm thrilled. I was going to choose Robert Johnson too. I'm a huge Robert Johnson guy. I know Jeff did the same thing that I did. I had like the weird LP version of it. And then they came out with a box set that was just every single song that he'd ever done.
Yep.
And I got that box set and I just wore it out. I love all of Jeff's points on this. I'll note a couple of things. First, I'll note the legend is part of it. Like, he was not famous in his lifetime.
Yes.
And he died when he was 27. And then he's dug up again in 41. And then he's dug up again in 48. Like, as late as the late 40s, white people in the North are like, holy shit, I traveled down to Mississippi to find Robert Johnson to get him to play. And they're like, dude, he died. Like, he's dead.
Yeah.
Alan Lomax and other people are continuously going down there to try and find him.
That's right. So,
and then he gets to be really famous in the 60s because all of these British rock acts. And then there's this re-exhumation of him and a recreation of all of the legends. And so Sunhouse and these other dudes who were contemporaries of his get to create the legend. Yeah. And it's a total history is written by the winners thing. Like, so for example, Jeff told the story. There's multiple different versions of the story where he dies, where he's killed, poisoned, run out of town, bad things by a lover. There's also significant evidence that he just died of syphilis.
Yep.
Just died of syphilis. Equally believable. Not as much fun. And you can see why.
Not as much fun. Yeah, that's rough.
Sunhouse's version of the story is he was an embarrassment. He couldn't play guitar. I laughed him off the stage. And then he went away, made a deal with the devil, and then came back and he was better than I was. Which, if you look at it from Sunhouse's point of view, it's a great, great, very self-serving version of the story, for sure. It's not that he took 2 years and learned how to play the guitar. It's that he sold the soul to the devil, and that's the only reason he was better. The other thing I'll note is the guitar work. Oh, man. So good. So good. So among his contemporaries, I mean, among his American contemporaries, there's no doubt. Like, if you listen to the Sunhouse recordings from this time, Bilbo Brunzi, any of these 30s guitar players, he's so much, he's faster. There's just like the sheer technical aspect to it. But also, like, the song that Jeff played and all of these songs are like this. They're syncopated. They're weird. He comes in and out. He's up at the top of the neck. He's back at the bottom of the neck. He's got these big, chunky chords in there.
Yep.
The rhythm's moving up and down as he goes. Like, it's really, really, really super weird and interesting. Jeff, is that the song you play your students?
I usually play them Crossroads Blues first because they know it from Eric Clapton and Cream. They're like, oh, I know this one. And then I also play Hellhound on My Trail. This one,
so that's interesting. I would choose Sweet Home Alabama. I mean, Sweet Home Chicago. That's
right.
The song. So first of all, Sweet Home Chicago, if you listen to it, it's a Chuck Berry song.
Like, yeah.
It's a Chuck Berry song in 1937. Like, all of the Chuck Berry parts are already there. It's already completely written. It's got the counting. It's got the sheer joy of it. And of course, like,
yep.
I mean, we'll talk about it again when we get to Chicago. But I mean, the Great Migration, here it is right here in 1937. Yep. Like, this is a guy who, of course, all of these things are suppositions. We think that he went to these various places. I mean, in Sweet Home Chicago, he suggested he's been to California, which he's definitely, there's no suggestion.
No chance he went there. Yeah.
There is a suggestion that he might have played in Chicago. But the whole idea that, like, that was his home was really not so much. Anyhow, that's the one that's most straightforward, and that's the one that sounds most like a modern song. You know what I mean?
You're right.
But yeah.
And in fact, it's recognizable as the source material for what comes next, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's And it's the one that does the least amount of bar jumping. Like I said, 12 bar blues. One of the things about Robert Johnson is sometimes it's 8, sometimes it's 11, sometimes it's 14.
The only guy who compares to him is Django Reinhardt. That's a rough contemporary from Europe. But Django Reinhardt is a faster soloer, but his songs aren't better and his rhythm's not better. I mean, as a solo act, I had the great fortune to go to the Big Ears Festival here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I've seen Iron and Wine twice with a full band. This is the first time I'd seen him solo. I was blown away how much better he was solo. And I would imagine Robert Johnson's the same thing, right? I mean, like he rings it out of that instrument, like all the different noises he gets out of that instrument and his voice, just the two of them, out there, just doing the whole thing.
No drums, no piano. Yeah. No.
Gripping. And you know, when you listen to it and you think about it as a technical matter, just all the action that's going on in there, and to record it live, one take, it's just fantastic. Oh, and the other thing that you like about it, if you're Ben Barton, is they're all recorded on 78s. So none of them are longer than 3 minutes.
That's right, because they're just running out of...
But you, like, dude, you get to 3 minutes and 3 seconds, they're like, dude, we hate you. It has to be 258.
That's amazing.
The recordings, the ones, there's several ones Jeff said there's two takes. The second take is 2 minutes. The first take is 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes. And then you can tell, I mean, of course, we don't have any information on this, but the engineer's like, for fuck's sake, Robert, I told you. And then he's like, okay, fine. Here's the 2 minute version. Hey, you like that?
Yeah, it's so true. You can hear it. You can just hear the, and I also love that, like, you know how hard it is to be yourself when you're being recorded. I mean, it is like, if you're playing a live show and somebody holds up a camera in the back, like that's different, but like this guy's got one shot. He goes to St. Louis. Yep. They put a microphone in front of him in San Antonio,
he's recorded in Texas too.
Right? And they're like, all right, go. And he can conjure that magic. Like my admiration for him, for what he was able to do and what must have been the weirdest, like it's got to be one of the two or three times in his life he was playing during the day for an audience, like, the one take, one shot only. And you know that there was a racial class component at work when they're like, sit in this chair, don't move, here's the microphone, that microphone's expensive, kid, you better be careful. I'm like, and in those things, he creates a whole subgenre of American art out of thin freaking air. I'm inexhaustibly fascinated by this guy.
Yeah. So. And you could tell, I mean, he's like, obviously he must have been fantastic live because he's just playing live into a mic. But there's a desperation. There's a hunger. There's a need. There's a need in these recordings. Like he's like, I have this one shot and I'm going to get it down. And I really always try and remember, and I never talk about the blues without mentioning the horrible, horrible deprivation that leads to this art. Like, don't sleep on that at all. Like the misery, the 1930s, like the people are sharecroppers, like they're just subsistence farmers getting lynched and like just held down. And so you can, like, obviously you can celebrate this art, you can love this art, but don't forget where the art comes from.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's what also, like, you talk about the move to Chicago when blues gets electrified, right? Like this is so elemental, right? Like you mentioned Alan Lomax, who is the field recorder for the Smithsonian that creates the Anthology of American Folk Music. Like this is that same level of elemental art. Like,
oh yeah.
This is performance, because if you don't do it, you might as well kill yourself because your life is so tough. It isn't, hey, welcome to the nightclub. We're in a city and we're a little bit safer and we've got enough money to go out on a Friday night and buy a few drinks. Like this is like juke joint, one night off a year. And I'm drinking myself miserable on purpose to forget who I am and how I live. And this guy mirrors it back and it's still entertaining. Like, Ben's. Yeah. Thank you, Ben. That's the last crucial point.
Well, that's a great, great talk. I bought that Robert Johnson set, but I came to it late. I came to it like in Vegas. So I think it was in my collection that you saw, Jeff. But before that, I had John Lee Hooker. So once I saw that he was of this particular area of the country, I wanted to go with John Lee Hooker's Decoration Day.
People, I had a woman. She was just nice and kind to me in most every way. Lord, I had a woman. She was just nice and kind to me in most every way. But she died and she left me. That's why I sang the blues on every decoration day.
I mean, it is funny. It is funny comparing the sound of Robert Johnson to John Lee Hooker. Like, you can just tell the production value has gone up. It's like Robert Johnson invented it, and John Lee Hooker's like, oh, okay, I could take this. I could take this to the next level.
I love John Lee Hooker. I almost met John Lee Hooker. He used to rehearse at the same studio complex as one of the bands I play with. And I was pulling into the little parking area when he was pulling out. And when I say he was in his Cadillac being driven by his guy. And by the time I waved and said, he gave me like the little like, hello. But I mean, he was probably 88 and he's just perched on the back seat of his Cadillac, like, he'd been placed there by his. I mean, he was so old and so frail by the time.
What year is he born? He's born in 17.
Yeah. This was in like 98. Yeah,
dies in Los Altos. Is that it? California. Yeah, Los Altos. But, son of a sharecropper. So that gets to your point, Ben. That these guys know of what they speak. It is 9:51. What time did we start?
We started a long time ago.
We went long.
We're going to be cutting left and right.
Oh my God. But
I just want to make sure we have jobs.
I don't know what that means. People love it. You know how happy people are going to be when they open it up? It says an hour and 11 minutes. They're going to be like, oh, they went long. We're gonna make the last 2 miles of somebody's run so much happier.
My daughter's gonna be like, oh, I hope they didn't laugh too much. all right, well, let's call it. Let's call next week New Orleans. We're headed in that direction. Let's get.
I understand it's a pretty musical town.
Apparently they got some tunes down there. It's a whole scene, and I've been to the laundromat where rock and roll was invented, and not your Rocket 88 rock and roll. I'm talking about Little Richard.
Nice.
Have you been to that laundromat?
I have not. I'm going to be I think I'm probably going to be the third most knowledgeable guy when it comes to New Orleans. It's not a city. It's not a wheelhouse city for me. I'm excited to do some research.
Great city. Great city.
Yeah, you're in for a treat, man. It's the best.
All right, gentlemen.
I just haven't been there enough.
Hey, one thing to note about New Orleans. When we went down there, I bought tickets for all of us to a Pelicans game.
Oh.
And I now get a bi-weekly text from the Pelicans asking me if I want to buy season tickets.
Oh, I'll bet you do.
No, but how much for the team? Like, with the change in the quarters in my pocket, would I be able to buy the team?
Let's go.
You might be able to rename the arena if you come up with a couple extra. I can't imagine Smoothie King is going to hang in there to support it.
That's so sad. Hey, fun little secret to let you and the listeners in on. Flannery's birthday is coming up on Saturday. And I got her Taylor Swift tickets.
Yes.
We're driving to Nashville and we're going to do a little father daughter getaway with T Swizzle.
That is unbelievable.
Fantastic. I love that news.
Going to Music City. She's
going
to lose her head. It's going to be great.
She's going to lose her mind. That's so great. And the show, I am so impressed. Like, obviously, I've only seen clips and I'm not going to see it, but. I can't believe how ambitious and long the show is.
She's going
44 song set, 3 hours and 10 minutes.
That's
with no intermission. I mean, it's stand aside, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, that's so great.
Impressed.
I'm
so
wait.
Impressed by it. Are you going to go, Ben? Are you going to see this tour?
I'm hoping that she's going to add more dates. That's my hope.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I will.
And do you need you really need the podcast to start making money to pay for those tickets. So we'll do what we can to be entertaining.
Yeah. We're supposed to be getting a letter in the mail any day now. So we'll see what happens. All right, guys.
By the way, you're like the manager that worked with EZE. Chuck and I are like NWA. You're like, it's weird. The money hasn't come in. I'm waiting for a letter. And we're like, oh, okay. I guess we should just keep doing this for free. And
meanwhile,
like,
he's in Nashville watching Taylor Swift. Like,
it's nothing like that, I swear. You see,
good night, Colonel Parker.
My basement ceiling is finished next week. Wait a minute.
This is some BS background. He's actually
By the way, this is a picture from before. This is what it used to look like.
All right. God. Talk to you guys later.
Well done, fellas.
Thank you, friends. See. Love you, guys. Yep. Bye.
All right.
Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on Electricast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
Electricast.
Are you passionate about saving the planet for future generations? Do you want to learn how to do it? If yes, then you need to tune in to the Nature Backed Podcast. It's a talk show covering the changing world around us, from renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, circular economy, to ESG and social innovation. Don't miss this opportunity to discover how you can join the movement and make a difference. Subscribe to the Nature Backed Podcast today on your favorite platform and get ready to be amazed.
Electricast.